Flint, Michigan. How did a simple flip of a switch lead to a long-term public health crisis that tested the resilience of its residents? In this Science of Crime podcast series, we examine the chain of events that led to years of damage, distrust, and dirty water. My name is Furkan Qureshi, and this is episode number 4, The Biopsychosocial Effects of Lead Contamination in Humans. We know that lead is lethal in high enough doses. What happens when humans are exposed to low levels of lead through, let's say, environmental contamination? Specifically, how does it affect our emotional, behavioral, intellectual, and physical health? To answer this question, we're going to discuss current research and give an overview of the scientific consensus. The first study we'll look at focuses on a group of 42 workers exposed to varying degrees of lead, as compared to a group of 22 unexposed workers. Both groups were males of the same median age with only a primary school education. To avoid confounding variables, none of the subjects had any neurological or psychological condition that would influence the results. What the study found is that lead exposure was associated with statistically significant abstract speech impairment, cognitive impairment, and weakened ability to transfer short-term memory to the long-term. The researchers made a note that these symptoms comprise a larger picture of lead poisoning over a longer period of time. It's important to understand that this exposure to lead is essentially a slow poison that can be overlooked if the symptoms aren't detected or acknowledged. Moving on, this second study focused on two groups of 200 children who were environmentally exposed to lead through their proximity to the copper works. These two groups were from the same area, but one had higher blood lead concentrations than the other. The researchers made sure to control for confounding variables associated with socioeconomic status. And what this study found was that children with higher levels of lead had statistically significant lower IQ levels as well as poor attention and focus levels. The researchers go on to explain why children are at a greater risk when it comes to lead exposure. One reason is their faster metabolism. The same amount of lead can have amplified consequences. They also include that organs are developing at a faster pace for children. Any damage during this stage could have much longer lasting and significantly more debilitating effects. Since the blood-brain barrier is also still developing, we can give an explanation as to why these findings occur, why lead can affect psychological functioning. But how would that explanation apply to the first study? In adults, isn't the blood-brain barrier developed and protecting the nervous system from contaminants like lead? To answer this question, I'm going to introduce this episode's guest, Dr. Ayub Qureshi. He has a background in dermatology, practicing medicine and researching in various locations around the world. But he also has a general background in medicine and biochemical functioning. Dr. Qureshi, lead can affect the brain, but isn't the blood-brain barrier present in adults to prevent that? How does lead surpass the blood-brain barrier?
Well, that is accomplished in two different ways. The first involves lead mimicking or inhibiting the mobility of calcium. This activates protein kinases and causes irregularity in the vascular endothelial cells of the blood-brain barrier, so it crosses through. While this is happening, lead toxicity is damaging the brain's vascular endothelial cells and breaking the blood-brain barrier. So in the future, lead as well as other toxins like nitrogenous substances are able to cross the blood-brain barrier and cause further neuronal damage.
We'll now move into our third study, which is conducted on 237 inner-city African-American children with elevated blood lead concentrations. Many socioeconomic factors, especially regarding family situation, are present in inner-city children. So the researchers made sure to take 20 separate confounding variables into account with their results. And what they found was that lead exposure was associated with higher ADHD and inattention scores, as well as a variety of neurobehavioral issues. At this point, we're now seeing that effects of lead transcend intellectual functioning and can influence the developing of certain psycho or neuropathological conditions, like ADHD in this case. This also connects to discussion on how lead impacts behavioral and emotional health. Our next study focuses on 1,341 children from ages 3 to 6 in the Chinese district of Jintan. These children were tested for lead exposure from the ages of 3 to 5 and observed at age 6. Their socioeconomic status was noted to not have any statistical significance. Using teacher reports, a study found that children who were exposed to higher levels of lead showed more prominent signs of emotional reactivity, developmental issues like ADHD, and anxiety. The latter actually refers to DSM diagnosable anxiety disorders, as opposed to anxiety the symptom. The indicators of this study show that these children, as well as others exposed to lead, are going to develop drastic damages to their emotional and behavioral health. On top of issues with behavior, the study drives home the link between lead and psychopathology. It has the potential to cause, catalyze, or predispose to diagnosable disorders. So our skin, hair, and nails are often able to indicate aspects of our health. Since they are our body's external barrier, they come in direct contact to lead and other chemicals we may be exposed to. Dr. Qureshi, what effects does exposure to lead have on the skin or the integumentary system as a whole? Can they serve as indicators of exposure?
Organic lead or lead citrate absorbs through the skin and breaks skin epidermal barrier, which can cause contact irritant dermatitis. That's referring to an allergic dermatitis that causes inflammation, eczema, and superadded infection. Dermatitis like this can be caused by many different factors, but it can indicate exposure to lead. And by breaking the skin barrier, actually, lead can enter the bloodstream through dermal vessels and cause a lot of damage through the body.
So when you practiced dermatology, did you ever come across any patients with exposure to lead?
Well, we didn't see it concretely as lead exposure then. But back in Pakistan, we saw cases of severe irritant dermatitis that was linked to hair dye that contained lead acetate. That was probably because they were using cheap products, but only recently lead acetate was deemed unsafe by the FDA. And the FDA has even more recently reported that many US cosmetics have low lead concentration of around 7 to 20 parts per million, which is less than the toxic level, but still concerning.
While the scientific consensus lies with all the research we've presented, there are still some detractors. What do they have to say? Well, according to Alan S. Coffin, the results of studies like the ones aforementioned are exaggerated, and their conclusions are linked more to confounding socioeconomic variables than to low-level lead exposure. And on top of that, he alleges that the testing methods used in these studies lack diversity. In essence, they are unreliable because they are being generalized beyond their scope. His concerns are actually very valid if true. Differences in educational opportunities, as linked to socioeconomic background, can have large effects on the fulfillment of one's intellectual potential. And this can possibly seep into behavioral and emotional development. But again, that is if the claim is true, which it is not. In a scientifically published rebuttal, researchers Needleman and Bellinger say, like a one-eyed astronomer, Kaufman sees nothing outside of the narrow scope of psychometric IQ tests. So the second argument point is completely off the table. You can't use one single test to prove that others aren't using enough tests. But the researchers also tackle the first point made by Kaufman. They look at various studies that solidify lead's impact in low levels, building an understanding of how the studies account for socioeconomic variables. And we can see this with the discussion of confounding variables in all the studies mentioned in this episode. One even took 20 different factors into account. So that scientific consensus remains. But what does this information mean for the city of Flint? It means that after the risk of death, behavioral health was the priority for intervention. According to the 2016 CDC report on the crisis, the DHHS was specifically concerned about the onset of depression, anxiety, and substance abuse amongst Flint residents. Multiple organizations worked together to carry out psychological first aid in order to ameliorate the psychological well-being of the community. A survey of the area found that half of households with adults experienced elevated anxiety, stress, and depression, while half of households with adolescents experienced behavioral issues like aggressiveness and anxiety. According to the World Health Organization, there is no safe level of exposure when it comes to lead. The residents of Flint are being slowly poisoned by merely being exposed to it. Their plight may not be realized until it's too late, as symptoms from anxiety to intellectual impairment to dermatitis have such a broad causality that they may not be linked back. We would predict that over time, these symptoms will only grow worse, following suit with the findings of this episode. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.